Hello, everyone. Welcome to an exciting new episode in our new season of coverage of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. We are covering Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 3. We're covering Episode 1, Hegemony Part 2. We're covering Episode 2, Wedding Bell Blues. We are Uncanny Treks. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Matt, we're back. Strange New Worlds is back. Are you happy?
I am, Bob. I do wish I would have gone back and rewatched Part 1 before I watched Part 2. It's been so long. I was glad they showed us what happened on the previous show.
On one hand, I get what you're saying, but for me, this felt like a classic next-gen two-parter cliffhanger over the seasons, right? Where on the one hand, it's a huge cliffhanger, and then the resolution episode has, in some ways, very, very little to do with the first episode. I would compare it to Best of Both Worlds and Descent from Next Generation in that sense. Not to disagree with you right up front, but I didn't feel the loss of not immediately returning and watching Hegemony Part 1.
The problem is I had to get right back into the swing of things. I'd forgotten that we left off with Pike not making a call yet on what to do about the Gorn. So I remember having that, please don't go off the air yet. Please don't be done with the episode yet. And then boom, it was done. Crap, got to wait another year before what happens.
And then it turned into 2 years.
And then now I go back and watch the episode and it starts off right at that point where he's having to make the decision, but it's 2 years. So I don't have that emotion still built up in me after 2 years. So then he makes a decision and I'm like, oh, he just figures it out. Okay.
We'll say maybe this didn't hit for you, but to me, the emotional weight was more carried by wondering what they were going to do with Pike's girlfriend, Captain Battelle. That to me still had enough emotional weight that I still felt pretty invested, even despite the 2 year gap.
I believe we thought she was already dead.
I think we both thought she was cooked. We recorded our episode on the season 2 finale 2 years ago.
Well, Bob, in this episode, the Enterprise attempts to rescue the captured away team from the Gorn.
Yeah, Matt. And so you remembered that Paramount Plus drops these after midnight, and so we're watching it yesterday morning and texting me, and I'd forgotten that it would already be on Paramount Plus. One of the things you texted me that was intriguing was that they used a visual effect from Twin Peaks The Return, and you wanted to see if I got it.
No, you're wrong.
My theory was they rammed the Gorn destroyer to escape, to put a tracker on it so they can track the away team, and then they warp out. And then it seemed to me like a pretty peculiar visual effect of them going straight to warp from being right by the ship. And I wondered if that weird visual effect of the warp was Peaks The Return thing.
No, it was towards the end of the episode where Mitchell is at the con. When they're between the two stars.
Binary stars.
Right. They set themselves up between the binary stars. The Enterprise is being irradiated. There's a slow motion movement. And if you look at Mitchell, it looks exactly like the exact same effect they used in Twin Peaks when he's on that floating thing. And they're showing you how the movement is very stilted. It's something you really have to see to remember. But if you do go back and watch it, you'll see it's the exact same effect they used during that scene in Twin Peaks. And I was, oh, I know I've seen this before. And that was it. NATO's in the scene, and so is Cooper. It's when they're together, and they're floating out in space, and that, like, I don't know. I can't even tell you what it was, because we don't know what it was. But if you have not ever watched Twin Peaks The Return, go watch all of Twin Peaks, and then watch Twin Peaks The Return.
Interesting.
And Firewalk with Me.
That's the essential thing. Well, Matt, on a more minor scale, I did chuckle a lot that Admiral April's flagship is the USS Pablo Picasso. That made me chuckle. I'm of the school that you should get away from American and British military name for ships and then name them after random, like, cultural and historical figures.
Yeah.
Matt, did you appreciate that we see Scotty learning how to lie to his captain from Pelia?
Scotty was in the show the last season because he shows up at the very end, right?
In the finale.
When I saw him, I was like, oh yeah, Scotty's still around. I forgot about that. And Pike really expects a lot out of Scotty. I'm surprised that dude doesn't have major anxiety in the original series.
Well, and Scotty's in the main cast for this season. Martin Quinn is in the opening credits cast now.
We've got Scotty, we've got Spock, we got Kirk.
We're going to have everybody except for, stationed on the Enterprise, except for Jim Kirk by the end of the show, probably. Maybe they'll even find a way to get Chekhov on the Enterprise. When the away team is on the Gorn Destroyer and they come out of, like, their little hibernation things, did you more like Sam Kirk immediately vomiting or Ortegas freaking out about her hand?
I was freaked out about Ortegas's hand because I saw it before she saw it. And then, does she know her hand's messed up? It was gross. And then you find out that these Gorn are feeding off of them, different parts of these people.
With poor Ortegas, this really sets up the twist at the end of the second episode, which we will get to eventually.
Right.
And then to go back to Scotty for a minute, Matt, he at one point he calls someone a bawheed. And I looked that up, and that actually is a Scottish colloquialism. And so it means someone who's stupid or someone with a large, round, stupid face.
I want my vocabulary.
To your point about Scotty's anxiety, Elliot tricking him into finishing the Gorn cloaking device. We're all going to die, Scotty. That was pretty funny. On the one hand, this is such acute prequelitis, right? Because we've got to see how he became a great engineer, Matt.
Right.
But on the other hand, it's so funny that I excuse it.
I do wish they would have had a little more time between that scene and then Pike actually calling over the intercom for Scotty to hurry up. Because to me, the joke landed a little flat because it sounded like Pelia was just coming in here to tell him what Pike was about to call him on. But then that wasn't the idea, but it just seemed that way, the way it was structured.
Between Scotty's anxiety plot, Matt, and the fact that the major subplot of this episode is Spock and Chapel figuring out how to give the captain's girlfriend a safe abortion, Star Trek has gone so woke. It's so woke, Matt.
Bob, I've never seen Star Trek ever so woke before.
What? We're back, baby. We're back, Matt. Did the plan to turn the Enterprise into a star, did that feel very All-Star Superman to you?
The whole scene on the bridge where they're trying to figure everything out, all I could think about were those seminars at my work where they talk about how you should collaborate with each other. Everybody's giving their 2 cents, and I'm okay, this is how it's supposed to work. I get it, but man, this is rough. They come up with some crazy shit. I just went with it.
Do you feel like Scotty in your work seminars? Do you feel like the guy who actually has to execute?
Yes. That's usually what it boils down to.
I mentioned this before, but this episode in particular, between the fact that the plan is to trick the Gorn into sleeping, that's very reminiscent of the finale of Best of Both Worlds Part 2.
Right.
And then the fact that it involves them going into, if I remember correctly, in Descent Part 2, Dr. Crusher flies the ship into a sun to hide, I think, from the Borg. Whereas in this, they're setting up the transmissions, but going into the star felt very Descent Part 2. So yeah, they were really studying next generation cliffhanger resolutions to get this hegemony two-parter home, Matt.
When you saw the starships that the Gorn were flying, we saw those the previous season, right? To me, they were reminiscent of Babylon 5 and the Star Furies.
I was thinking more Star Wars, especially like the way they were moving like starfighters, but I could definitely see the Babylon 5 connection too. Glad Ortegas got to fly a Gorn fighter.
She does fly the ship.
She flies the Gorn ship, Matt. She flies the Gorn ship. Any other thoughts about this episode before we do our character of the episode?
So, Bob, there's controversy at the end of this episode because Pike decided to pray. And people are saying that organized religion wasn't a thing at this time.
Well, this is set up in Discovery Season 2.
Right. So who cares, number one? And second, because the point was, he was freaking out. He would do anything. He would try anything to make sure she survived.
On the one hand, I am sympathetic to the idea that organized religion ought to not be a big thing in Star Trek or ought to take freaky, weird new directions. But on the other hand, this was set up in Discovery Season 2. Pike having this fraught relationship with organized religion with his father. And I thought it was a good character beat. In some ways, it's less about Pike's relationship with his dad and more about his relationship with his dad. And I also think it's interesting that Pike can deal with, he knows what's going to happen to him, right? Seeing how he winds up, and he can confront that, but he can't confront losing Captain Battelle. And I think it's a revealing character piece about Pike, so I can't find it in me to be very upset about Pike getting religion in a crisis moment.
It was also taken to be somewhat humorous because she was already awake. So yeah, well, Bob, my character of the episode is Pike because he was just awesome in this episode.
Matt just loves it.
That's right, that was the praying.
It was bright.
Not the leadership role he plays on the bridge.
Because that gave you nightmare flashbacks to your collaborative seminars.
Who was your character of the episode, Bob?
I'm going to go with Mitchell just because she was very, very prominent, especially early in this episode with contributing to the plans and the schemes. And I was just a little surprised. I think I picked Mitchell once last season, too.
Yeah.
I still just can't shake the feeling that they've just race and gender swapped Gary Mitchell. I think they maybe have just done that.
Yeah, it's a possibility.
I'm fine with that. It's not deeply important to me that Gary Mitchell be a white guy.
Yeah, that's true. She did get a lot more screen time in this episode, which is good. I always like when they highlight certain other members of the bridge crew, not just Pike and Spock.
It's not just that she has the name Mitchell, but she's in the same post that Gary Mitchell has in Where No Man Has Gone Before. She's in like that navigator pose that Chekhov.
It's going to be really weird if they do replace her with a white dude named Mitchell. Like it would be awkward.
On a show that has Scotty, Uhura, Spock, Sam Kirk, Jim Kirk, you can't then just have a character named Mitchell in the same post as the other character named Mitchell and not expect me to think about it, right?
Being really stupid. What if there's some story where Mitchell gets a gender swap?
That'd be cool. I want Star Trek to explore that. Gender transitioning in the 23rd and 24th century ought to be relatively seamless and good storytelling potential, and I want them to go there.
All right, Bob, the second episode, much more hilarious than the first.
It's a hijinks episode, Matt. Yep. I was really trying to find somebody outraged about this episode in a humorous way online, and I found a few people outraged about it, but none were outraged in a particularly humorous way. And I was a little disappointed. I wanted my haters to be of a slightly higher quality.
It's really hard to hate on Strange New Worlds. That's the good thing about the show.
People still manage it, man.
They do.
Wedding Bell Blues, Matt. What goes down?
So a warped reality is created by Trelane in which Spock and Nurse Chapel are set to be married.
Did you know it was Trelane from Jump, Matt?
Not until the final scene. And that was, it's Trelane. That's why I felt so stupid. I was I don't know why I didn't put two and two together till the end.
Well, I didn't go back and rewatch The Squire of Gothos, but one does. And this is not a full-on criticism of the show. I don't care if it introduces some inconsistencies, but yeah, it makes me curious to go back and see how Spock reacts to Trelane in that episode since he's already met Trelane in this episode.
I'll give you a spoiler, Bob. It's probably not going to be the way you want it to work out.
Probably is it, but sometimes there are interesting things where sometimes the writers are intentionally setting things up and sometimes they're just not worrying about it. And both are fine approaches. So Matt, just to refresh you on the timeline and also to refresh myself, 2161, that's the year the Federation is founded and also one of the years that the Enterprise finale takes place in. Then The Cage, the first original series pilot episode, is 2254. Discovery Season 2 starts in 2257, which is where we first see this version of Pike in this version of the Enterprise. The first Strange New Worlds premiere, the Season 1 premiere, takes place in 2259. This episode, Wedding Bell Blues, takes place in 2261. So it's the centennial of the Federation founding and also the centennial of one part of the Enterprise finale. The second pilot of the original series, Where No Man Has Gone Before, with Gary Mitchell. That's 4 years later in 2265. The actual original series, Season 1, is 2266 on the timeline.
Oh, wow.
That's where we're at on the timeline.
So we're getting closer.
We're getting closer.
Going to be the final season of the show, correct?
It's going 5 seasons. What I read, and I'm pretty sure this was right, is that it was already renewed for Season 3 and a Season 4, and then they went ahead and renewed it for Season 5, and I'm not sure if this is 100%, but I think it's pretty close to 100% that with Discovery and with Lower Deck, 5 seasons is just now going to be the standard. I would love 2 more seasons of it over that, but it's a different era. I get it. I'm not going to be too sore about it.
Right. So the timeline, so we got 4 years left between until Pike gets in trouble.
They see Pike in 2266 in the original series, Season 1, and he's burned and confined to the chair. But I can't remember on what the timeline is on how long before that episode that accident. They might put him in the chair in like 2264 or 2265. Well, Star Trek trivia thing. We see a single nacelle ship at the start of this episode, and I believe it's a Saladin class ship, which was from the old original series tech manual, and I was very happy.
I was excited about this episode.
What made it a Dexter opening?
The music, like Miami Sound Machine beat going on at the very beginning.
And then
they're dancing. Yeah, the Spock voiceover he's all serious about stuff and you find out he's just dancing.
As we started this episode, did you remember that Nurse Chapel was engaged to Dr. Corby in that one episode of the original series?
I did not, Bob. I knew she had other relationships. I forgot that this was the guy.
Do you want me to quickly, because I rewatched that episode last night after watching this episode, do you want me to give you a quick précis of that episode?
Yeah, give us a little one, Bob.
So in that episode, it's established that Chapel is a little bit in conflict with what we see here, which again is fine. But it establishes that Chapel joined the Enterprise to hunt for her missing fiance. And he had been missing for about 5 years. So he's going to go missing in this year. This is 2261. And that episode takes place in 2266.
Oh, okay. Now that you've said this, it's bringing up things in my brain that I vaguely remember this going on, because I thought it was weird that she joined the crew just to search for this dude. So I guess it's implied she's going to come back to the Enterprise sometime because this dude's missing. And Spock's going to help find him.
Maybe I missed something, but I took it to be that she's back on the Enterprise for good now, and they're just dating. He just came with her to be her date. He'll go back to her thing, and she'll go back. Or maybe he'll stick around, but maybe I missed something. But as I take it, she's still on the regular cast, and she's going to be in the rest of the season, was how I took this episode. She did her fellowship, which was, maybe they said something different about it in season two. I don't remember, but they just described it in the premiere as a 3-month fellowship. So that's over.
Okay, well, good.
At least as I understand it.
That makes sense.
So he goes missing, and then they find him. They go to this place where he was last reported and where a couple of expeditions had not found him. And they find him, but then it turns out that he was dying, and he found this technology from an ancient alien civilization and turned himself into an android, basically. He uploaded himself into an android. And the moral is basically that he's lost all his humanity. And so the android dies at the end of the episode, but the way that Kirk and Chapel interpret the situation is that her fiance had already been dead for years. And there's also funny, because there's a sexy lady on the planet with him, and the sexy lady is eventually, before he's revealed to be an android, the sexy lady is revealed to be an android. And but when she's human, when they think she's human and when they think she's a sexy lady, Nurse Chapel is very jealous of the sexy lady who's with her missing fiance.
Taste of her own medicine. Ha! Spock's just laughing from the bridge.
Sorry that I'm skipping us ahead, but for Strange New Worlds, you and I both like to find somebody on the internet hating on these episodes that we think is funny and pull it out. And so I think a lot of the hater stuff about this episode was how bad Chapel is, and who knows how close they're going to stick to this original series episode. And it's not a great episode, so I'm not saying they should stick close to it, but if they do stick at all close to it, it's, man, poor Nurse Chapel is going to get hers, right?
That's the truth.
One other little bit of fun trivia, Matt, that episode with Nurse Chapel's fiance was written by Robert Block, who wrote the novel that Psycho is a film of.
Oh, wow.
To go back to just the practicalities of it, Matt, we get new haircuts for both Chapel and Uhura. Were you surprised?
Yeah. I guess time, it was just showing that time had, like, gone by, I guess is the idea. I like Uhura's new hair. That looked really cool.
Cool. Did Chapel in this episode, and definitely they're just trying to make it look, okay, it's been 3 months, new boyfriend, new look, right? I get it. But did she look unsettlingly different to you this episode? There was something in some of the scenes where she looked a little unsettling how different she looked.
She looked sad. She knows she's in a bad situation with Spock here and her boyfriend, and it's just showing on her face. It's really good acting.
We're thinking it was in the makeup and the hair choice.
Oh, okay.
It looked different in a very striking and slightly unsettling way to me. But that also might just be me. I really like the last season version of Chapel, and I might just be psychologically struggling with any change at all.
Characterization is slightly different right now, Bob. It's a little different.
Matt, did you like Ortegas's younger brother?
He's interesting. He's a little spunky kid with his cameras, and he has a crush on Uhura.
I hate documentary filmmakers, but I still found him charming. And I like he and Uhura's commitment to annoying his older sister. Oh, I appreciate that. Did you catch that people kept calling Trelane an Andorian in the delusion he had them in?
Yeah, I mean, is it because he is? That was the first thing Spock says. He's, I didn't know we had an Andorian bartender. You can't just go up in places and say stuff like that, right? You can't just go, I didn't know we had a Scottish bartender in here. Is that okay? Is that okay in the century? It sounds a little racist, Bob.
Part of the thing, right, is racial and national differences are not, right, they're real in a social sense, but they're not real in a biological sense. And so there's a little bit of observing that somebody is a different species.
Sure. Are they seeing him as an Andorian?
That's what I think they were saying. Because another character, I can't remember who, maybe Sam Kirk.
There's more than one. It's a quantum leap scenario, Bob. We saw Trelane and everybody else saw Trelane looked in a mirror.
Matt, it's also funny that you bring up racism, because I wasn't going to bring this up, but the episode of the original series with Nurse Chapel and her fiancé, there's a weird subplot where the android of Nurse Chapel's fiancé builds an android to replace Captain Kirk, and he goes back to the Enterprise, and he's really racist to Spock, and he calls him a half-breed.
Oh, God.
Then the, you know how structurally in the original series, you usually have at the last beat of the episode is Kirk and Spock or Kirk and Spock and McCoy on the bridge saying something to each other. So in this episode, it's never established that Spock knows for sure that that was not Kirk that said that to him. And Spock is just, you know, Captain, that was arguably a little prejudiced and a little unsophisticated that you called me half-breed. And Kirk doesn't explain that it wasn't him. And he's just, I hadn't considered that, Mr. Spock, but I will keep that in mind going forward.
Oh, God. What is the name of this episode, by the way?
What Are Little Girls Made Of? Very early in season one.
Okay. So this sounds like something worth watching.
Only one of the weakest original series episodes. Maybe bottom third, I would say.
Is it better than, it's not as good as the animated series, right?
It's better than most of the animated series, but not all of it. Let's see, what else should we say? We do have the callback to the everybody's least favorite episode, not really, but some haters' least favorite episode was the musical episode last season. And we definitely have a callback to that where Spock recalls the time that they went through an anomaly that made them all sing, and he gets a distant, vaguely traumatized expression as he's explaining this to Roger Croyby. That was very funny.
Bob, they decided to throw a bachelor party for Spock.
They did, and Pike popped out his green tunic for the
bachelor party. I was so excited. That was the best look.
Oh, he looks so good. It officially establishes the green tunic as like the party gear. It's a lounge gear.
Yeah, it's your casual uniform.
You break it out when you're going to cook dinner and then have karaoke with boys. So, Matt, there was a part of this episode I was a little confused of. Scotty is offered at the bachelor party, and he turns it down, but it sounds like he's saying he doesn't drink. Is he saying that because he hasn't become an alcoholic yet, like he is in normal Star Trek? Or is he saying that he doesn't drink because he is an alcoholic and he's trying to hide it?
I would think he's trying to hide it. But at the same time, I'm trying to wonder if they're going to retcon that whole thing.
Yeah, because we do see him go whole hog on the alcohol at the end of the episode, right?
Right. Maybe this is his introduction to alcohol.
I wonder, and I think a lot of the show, and so I'm not that worried about it, but I'm almost worried if between his anxiety with Pike and Pelia that they explored last episode and the drinking stuff in this episode, is this going to be like the reoccurring subplot for Scott this season?
Could be. He starts drinking every episode. That's going to be a thing we can look for.
We'll have to keep a track of Scotty's cups.
I've learned a lot about Scotty is that he has all this anxiety from Pike and everybody in charge of him that he has to go in and drink himself to stay calm. There's a whole vibe with Scotty at this point.
Have you seen the horror movie Midsommar?
I've not, no.
Okay, I just want to say, maybe this is just me. Maybe anytime I see somebody wearing a garland of flowers, I'm going to go back to this horror movie. But the garland of flowers that Corby had around his head and the decorations of the wedding, it gave me a little bit of a Midsommar vibe, I have to say. Although I really did like Chapel's, I'm going to describe it as like peacock dress, peacock wedding dress. That was a very cool dress. It looked pretty similar, I think, to dresses we've seen Spock's mother in
right.
the original series episodes.
I got to give it up to whoever the costume designers are for this episode, man. Everybody was wearing crazy stuff. The dress, though, you're talking about, it's almost snake wraps around at the top of it.
Which, it's funny, you think snakes, I think peacock.
Yeah, it's really cool designs. And whatever Uhura was wearing, too, was awesome.
Yeah, that was a good look for Uhura.
They went out of their way to make this look very formal for, like, a pretend wedding.
I love that this episode just turns, we are two of the most boring white heterosexuals in the world. And that this episode just turns us into gay men commenting.
Yeah.
And not doing it very well because we don't have a vocabulary for it. But Uhura and Chapel, they look nice.
They look great. It's a good look. It's not a sexy thing either. It's not even like a sexual thing. It's more just they look really cool looking. Yeah, that color vibes with everything else going on here.
This show is both really good at doing campy stuff, and it's also really good at doing like funny retro futurist science fiction aesthetic.
Right.
I really appreciate both angles of the show in that way. So, Matt, were you happy to see Q show up as a ball of energy voiced by John DeLancey?
I was fine with it. It really gives credence to that rumor that Trelane was a Q. Or part of the Q continuum, which I always believed. And this just solidifies that.
I've never read the book, but and obviously books aren't canon, but apparently there's a whole series of Q books where it is established that Trelane is the bastard son of John DeLancey Q.
Yeah.
But I did want to ask, and so listeners, if I make a mistake, forgive me, but you didn't watch much Voyager, but you remember that Q having a son, Q Jr., is a plot point in several episodes of Voyager, right?
Yeah.
And there's, because of the way John DeLancey talks about Trelane at the end of this episode, some people are also thinking that this, some people think this is Q Jr. from Voyager instead of Trelane. And I think more people probably just think Trelane and Q Jr. from Voyager are the same person. It also makes the timeline very confusing. It fits because the Qs are interdimensional beings, but Q Jr. is like a baby and then an adolescent in Voyager. But clearly the Qs don't exist in linear time, right? Which we also kind of have to see for Q dying at the end of Picard to make sense at all.
I forgot Q died. Why'd you have to remind me of that?
It was a terrible scene.
Thanks, Bob.
I don't think this is terrible.
Oh, God. Bob, this, I almost turned it off. When they played Wham's Wake Me Up Before You Go.
That's your favorite type of music.
Bob, I like that type of music, but not on my Star Trek. I almost got my newspaper out and was going to smack Stranger Worlds in the head. No.
Not a fan of the song, but getting to see Scotty and Mbinga drunkenly dance together, and then also seeing, if I'm remembering right, it was Sam Kirk dancing with two Andorians,
yeah,
and Leon and Spock dance.
Oh, God. Bob, I don't like this. Bringing in popular music from the 80s into Star Trek, this is the second time it's happened. Because we had in Picard, we had We Belong to the Night by Pat Benatar. It's getting stupid. The only other time they did this in Star Trek was with the guy, Zefram Cochrane, when he was shooting off and they played Beastie Boys.
Was that? So they used Beastie Boys an awful, awful lot in the J.J. Abrams Star Trek.
And see, and those movies suck. So see what I'm saying?
They do. They do. But I think, was it Beastie Boys? I can't remember. I remember that Zefram Cochrane is blasting something. James Cromwell is blasting something, but I don't remember what it was. But I would just say that the difference is that Picard and the JJ movies suck, and First Contact and Strange New Worlds don't suck. And so it bothers me when something that sucks does it, and it doesn't bother me when something that doesn't suck does it.
All right, now I feel like an idiot, Bob, but it was actually Flight of the Phoenix by Joel Goldsmith and Magic Carpet Ride by Steppenwolf.
Oh, yeah, it was the Magic Carpet Ride, man, wasn't it? I should have remembered that.
Our brains are weird, because the Beastie Boy thing is from us. It's from Jim Cartwright when he's in the car.
Yeah, they use it to defeat the aliens in Star Trek Beyond as they fly around blasting them with the song. Nothing that bad happened in this episode. Characters dance bad song in a charming way.
This is why I need you, Bob. See,
I'm just Matt. Remember the worst thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is nowhere near that.
Yeah, I guess I can live with it, but it was a little cheesy. It was cheesy.
No, I see what you're saying, though. Yeah. It's a fair point. I don't share it, but it's a very fair point. The cliffhanger, man. Ortega's got that Gorn in her.
Shoot.
That dog in them.
I was afraid they were going to write Ortega's off when she was missing a hand.
It did seem like they might have killed her in that season 3 premiere. I'm glad. I want her to stick around.
Bob, so anything else about this episode we want to talk about?
No, Matt. What was your character of the episode?
I'm going to give it a Spock, Bob. Leonard Nimoy is like I don't want to say a race, but this dude's replacing Spock in my head.
Yeah, for sure. Ethan Peck, man, he's a hell of an actor. He's doing a great job. I hate prequels, but I just don't mind it when Strange New Worlds does it because they're so good at it.
Nope. That's the truth.
And then I'm going to give it to Roger Kirby, Matt. They got an Irish guy who I think grew up speaking Irish to play Kirby. Loved his accent. And I like that they made Kirby a likable character, which he definitely is not in the original series episode.
Android, Bob. He's an android in the old episode, right?
Yeah. He's an android. And I did like that little aside that Trelane and Spock have together of Spock's like, why would you do this? And Trelane's just like, well, look at him. He's so annoying. Spock's, I see what you're saying. Looking at him, meaning look at Kirby. We like to end on a note of hater. So we both scour the internet to find not just a negative comment, but an amusing negative comment. So what was the one you came up with?
So, Bob, this person said, is anyone else convinced that Nurse Chapel is as bad a character as Neelix? I have gone from being indifferent to her to thoroughly disliking her. She sucks as a person. What the hell? Nurse Chapel is not a bad character. You don't compare to Node.
On the one hand, I do a little bit see where the commentary's coming from. I saw other people express similar sentiments that they really like Spock and they feel for Spock as Chapel rejects him. But on the other hand, as I know you know, Matt, this is just an adult relationship, right? Where people move on.
Right.
It's handled. She literally tells Spock not to wait for her.
And the crazy thing, Bob, is they can already see into the future. They know Spock and Chapel aren't getting together. It was never going to happen.
Well, and it also, I talked about this in prior seasons, and I'm really curious to see how the rest of the show handles it, because it is a little sad sack the way that Chapel spends the whole original series pining for Spock. And just knowing that weights over this show is an interesting thing. And I'm really just curious to see what they do, if anything, about that as the show continues for its last three seasons.
So I'll let you do your comment. Do you think that, Jim, they're going to do a series after Strange New Worlds where they basically redo TOS with the current actors? That's kind of what I'm thinking too. And that way they can redo some of these stories that don't line up right. But I think it's going to piss a lot of people off.
On the one hand, I don't want them to do that. But on the other hand, I like all these characters. And if the level of writing is similar to the level of writing on Strange New Worlds, I'll probably enjoy it.
Also, these actors are going to be cast for the rest of their lives. So they need to live with that.
Actors. That is the kind of a shame, because I do want to see like what Ethan Peck and Jess Bush and Anson Mount can do in other circumstances. I like to see them get to do other stuff besides Star Trek.
All right, Bob.
I want them to go on Star Trek. So my hater comment, Matt, this was from the website Serialized. This was about the premiere, about Hegemony Part 2. And it was, this show so bad, damn. Fuck them for what they did to the Gorn.
What did they do to the Gorn?
I love that first episode of the Gorn from the original series. But yeah, there's just nothing to the Gorn. There's nothing to the Gorn to ruin. The novels don't. Sorry if you want them to count. I understand your pain, but they don't count. What did they do? What did they ruin about the Gorn? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't either. They made them interesting and gave them a story.
Then they put them to sleep so that they can come out and be ready in 6 years.
Right. They gave you an in-universe reason why we haven't seen the Gorn in a while. Yeah, they're hibernating. Yeah. Come on, that was smart. I don't get it sometimes.
Well, Matt, we now know that the two greatest villains of Strange New Worlds are Nurse Chapel and the Gorn.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been delightful to talk with you about Strange New Worlds being back, Matt. We will try to keep doing this week to week. And please join us, listeners, as we march forward on Strange New Worlds Season 3. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everyone.
Thanks for listening.